welcome to Books Unbucket, the podcast where we unbind books to get to their hearts with your hosts, me, Raylene, and...
me, Muriel!
You should tell the story of Muriel.
All right, well, basically I'm very jealous because many eons ago, Raylene said Ruben for God knows what reason instead of Raylene at the introduction of some episode. And I, ever since then, I'm like, oh my God, Raylene's so much more fun than me. I don't have an alter ego. And I think literally last week's or 2 weeks ago's episode, we talked about how it has to kind of come naturally. It just has to come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And we were talking and then I sent Raylene a message because I got a DM from someone on Instagram who, I don't know if they accidentally called me Muriel or they just like...
I think it might have been an autocorrect situation.
It could have been autocorrect, but I was like, Raylene, I think this is my Ruben. And Raylene was like, yes, it's Muriel and Ruben. So I have my alter ego. I have my Books Unbound alter ego. Thank God. Mm-hmm. It was about time. It's about time.
Yeah, we were waiting for this.
It's good. It makes me feel like an old lady in a really good way.
Yeah. Just like I feel like an old man in maybe not the best way, but I love it all the same. It's my fave. Oh, man. Feels good to be back doing another recommendations episode.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we've got some more really fun recommendations this time. Last time we recorded a recommendations episode, we recommended books to a plant. So I don't know if we can ever really reach that level again.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
But these ones are pretty damn close. I feel like we got some really interesting ones that are going to spark some discussion. So I'm pumped to get into these. Do you have any updates before we jump right in?
God, I'm trying to think. Updates. Life. I feel like the elephant in the room is my bookshelf because we talked about it like a month ago or something and I was so close to finishing it. And what happened was basically I have finished everything else in the office except for the bookshelves. So I have really been doing a lot of reno work in the office. I've painted all the trim, I did all of the floor and I painted the walls and now I've painted, and I'm currently like in the middle of, I'm almost done painting this white trim above. And yeah, there's just been so many other projects in here that I've basically finished. And now I'm like, okay, it's time. It is time. And I just like miss my books so much. The other day, CJ asked me for a book and I was like, oh yeah, I have that. And I had to like dig through buckets to find it. Like just through all of these boxes to try and find my book. And I was like, I miss having them on bookshelves. So it's time. So yeah, literally what I have to do left is so, I think it's minimal and it's going to, I'm also like so excited to make a video about it. And it's been such an annoyance for Books Unbound because of two things. One, I used to be able to, whenever I wanted to talk about a book on the podcast, go grab it from my bookshelf and then I can easily take the photo for Instagram and post it.
Yeah.
But like, because they're all in buckets, and I say that because they're in like not, they're not in cardboard boxes. They're like
they're
in
bins, right?
In bins. Yeah, that's probably a better word for it. Plastic bins. But because they're in all these bins, I'm like, I don't go out and get them for the photos because it'd be such a pain. So it's made taking the photos really hard. And then secondly, I used to just kind of like read the recommendation requests, like for example, what we're doing today, and like just stare at my bookshelves. Whereas now I just like scroll through my Goodreads catalog and it's not as inspiring.
Yeah, so, I understand that feeling quite a bit.
I'm really excited to go, have the bookshelves back for the podcast, for my videos, just for my, but mainly just for my life, just for my own feelings. So how about instead of a TBR challenge, I'm doing a shelf challenge. By the next time that we record, I will have them ready and they will be done. I don't know if I'll be able to post a photo of them then because I want to post my video about it before the photos come out, but they'll definitely be done next time. And like now I feel very confident about that because everything else in the office is done. So I don't have anything else really to do other than the shelves.
And it's fun because you're actually sitting in your office right now and I can see the bookshelves behind you. So the next time we record, the moment we like start the video, I'll be like screaming because your bookshelves will hopefully
exactly.
be done.
Exactly, you'll be able to verify. Really cool. You can see the tape marks where I need to put the rest of the shelves.
That's very cool. I'm excited for that to happen. That looks like it's going to be really high up, or maybe we're just sitting low.
No, it is going to be really high up. All the way.
Really high up.
All
That's
the way
crazy.
To the ceiling, man. I'm doing it. Oh my God. I'm going up. I'm going up in the world.
I can't wait. Okay, well, without further ado, let us jump into our first recommendation. So this one comes from Stephanie, and she says, I gravitate towards books that give readers what they need, not what they want. More specifically, I enjoy books with unsatisfactory endings because they're the ones that resonate with me the most. I also appreciate a good redemption arc because I like my characters to have layers to their personalities and live between shades of gray. They are the ones that I develop the strongest emotional connections with. So difficult stories slash characters is kind of the recommendation. So what direction did you take this in? I'm really curious to see what you...
I took this in the direction of a book that ends badly.
Ooh, okay.
Because like Stephanie said, I gravitate towards books that give readers what they need, not what they want. Books with unsatisfactory endings because they're the ones that resonate the most. And it came to me so instantly that I didn't bother to look up any alternatives. And I was like, it's 1984, ladies and gentlemen. It's 1984. So, can I spoil 1984? I'm going to try not to spoil it too much, but it has been out for almost 100 years. So, 80 years. So, this is on you if you haven't listened. Yeah, if you haven't read it yet. True. But basically, 1984 is about a... but a guy, Winston, a real dude, just kind of a normal citizen who works at the government in the records department. But what we come to understand very quickly is he's living in a dystopian future where the government has so much control over people's lives. It's a very, very dreary existence. People are more like drones than they are humans. No one's like making art, for example. It's very much just like go to work, do what the government tells you to do, go home, go to sleep. You get told who to marry, etc. And so he works at the records department where he will delete history, basically. Like the government will be like, hey, this happened last week. Now it didn't happen. Delete it from all records. And so that's his job. So that just gives like a good picture of what the world is like. But basically, you know, the catalyst for the book is that Winston doesn't want to live in a hellscape anymore. Or he at least, God, there's this beautiful line, and I'm going to completely butcher it. But he basically says there's the feeling that there must be more to human life. There's absolutely no proof of it. He has no reason to believe that there's more, except for the unstampable feeling that there must be more. And like I said, that's not a direct quote at all, but there's something along those lines. And it's one of those like really powerful lines where I'm like, yes, Winston, there is more. You got this, man. And so what the book is the journey of a guy trying to break out, but not like Katniss Everdeen style, because Katniss Everdeen style or a lot of YA dystopian is like, you know, everything works out in the end. Even if there are casualties or there is tragedy along the way, in the end, the government is broken and things are on the mend. Not in 1984. In 1984, things end badly and they end depressingly. And obviously George Orwell uses that, like Stephanie says, not the ending that we want, but the ending that we need. It's a warning. It's a warning that if you let yourself start to allow these little slippages in government control and like, okay, maybe we don't always need free speech and okay, we don't always, et cetera, et cetera. You're suddenly in a situation that you can't fix. And then also, Stephanie, I just realized when I talked about George Orwell, I get way too passionate. I apologize for that, really. it's just so important to me. I also think it goes for what Stephanie's saying about difficult characters, like characters that have layers to their personalities and live between shades of gray. Like one of the most powerful and depressing scenes for Winston is he starts dating this woman named Julia, and they're not supposed to date because it wasn't government mandated, so they're like dating on the DL, and then eventually shit hits the fan, shall I say, and there's this big question of will Winston rat out Julia or will he not, and it's this morally gray moment where you're just like, maybe Winston isn't as good as we think, but that's because he's a human. He's just a human. He's just like another a human who's trying to preserve his own life. God damn it. I should really reread that book. It's so good. It's so powerful. So if you haven't read it, Stephanie, or if you haven't read it in a long time, it's time.
It's time to revisit that. Well, my book is also kind of a dystopian book.
There
and
we go.
Mine also just like came to me right away when I read this.
Cool.
Because this book made me so mad when I finished reading it originally. And that is Bird Box by Josh Malman.
Oh, yeah.
This book, I mean, most people probably know what it's about, but just as a quick general synopsis, it is about a kind of bad thing just starts happening. I was going to say pandemic, but it's not a pandemic. but all of a sudden, there's this kind of event that happens where a bunch of people start kind of going crazy, and it's because they're seeing these creatures that could be creatures nobody really knows, because if you see them, you go crazy and you kill yourself, essentially, is what these beings do to people. And so people start wandering around with blindfolds on because they don't want to see these horrible things that will just ruin their lives. So yeah, throughout the book, there is something that you want, something that the reader wants more than anything. And by the end of the book, you don't quite get it. Mm. Like, you don't quite get the answers you're looking for. And it made me so angry. Like, honestly, when I first finished this book, I loved the whole book up until the ending. So I gave it 4 stars. I was like, you get 4 stars and that is that. But then after like thinking about it for a day, I was like, you know what? There's no other way that this could have ended.
Yeah.
So I bumped it up to 5 stars because I was like, you know what? There's not a single other way that this could have worked, like, within the confines of what the setup of the book is.
Yeah.
There's just no other way that this could have happened. So I ended up being like, you know what? This is what I needed. It's not what I wanted.
Exactly.
But
I was going to say, it fits so perfect for what Stephanie's asking. Yeah.
Exactly. And, I mean, there's also, obviously, now there's a sequel. Mallory is the sequel to this book that has come out.
Oh,
I have not
there?
Read it.
I haven't even heard a single thing about that.
Oh, yeah, there is a sequel. It came out, I think, last year, maybe at the end of last year. And I'm at this point, I still don't know if I'm going to read it. I want to, just because I want to know if we do get any more answers that are left kind of unsaid in this book. But I like the way that this book ended. I've come to terms with the way it ended, so I don't know. So I need maybe some people to give me their opinion on if that book is worth reading, because I haven't really looked into it much. But yeah, so this is the book that to me was just like so unsatisfying, but then when you think about it, it's exactly what I needed to hear. So
that's
hopefully
so
those recommendations work for Stephanie, because that was the best thing I had. Okay, Ariel, please read us the next recommendation from Jacob.
Well, I'm glad that we're doing this one. Jacob sent this a while ago, and yeah, it's sad, but I hope we can help a little bit. Mm-hmm. He wrote, essentially, I live in Alabama and a tornado ate my house and I have lost everything. My childhood home is gone. My family members are fine, but it all feels like too much. Happy book recommendations, please. Preferably magic and pretentious.
I love that.
So yeah, we just want to send Jacob a really big hug. It's one of those things where you realize and you remember that, you know, yes, this year has been hard for everyone because of the pandemic, but other problems don't stop just because there's a pandemic.
Exactly.
Like, other things can happen too. So we just want to send you a big hug, and we're really sorry, and we hope we can help you out with some book recommendations. So hope you that by the time, because it's been a while since you sent that, I think, Jacob, hopefully now you're in a new home, feeling safe. But yeah, Raylene, what did you think of for happy books? Maybe magical and pretentious.
Okay, so for this one, I ended up picking a book I haven't read yet, but I do plan to read very soon.
Okay.
Because I feel like from what everything I've heard, this has to be the most perfect recommendation for Jacob.
Okay.
And that is The House in the Cerulean Sea.
Oh, yes, I agree.
By T.J. Klune. So every single review I've seen for this book talks about how joyous it is and how happy it made them feel. It's very, you know, kind of pure-hearted and wonderful is everything that I've heard. And it is about a kind of like a school for kids with powers, I think. kind of like orphans who are magical. Yeah.
I feel like that's become like a subgenre.
Totally.
You know, like peculiar kids books and the Seanan McGuire books, and like there's so many of these. Yeah.
It is kind of a vibe. It's like we love magical children who don't really know what's going on in their lives. It's like a coming of age story as well.
Yeah.
So it's like combines a lot of great things. And yeah, one of my friends read this recently, and I don't know if anybody's pretentious per se, but she did mention that there are lots of precocious children. So if that helps at all, I don't know. But I feel like this just has to be a very happy, uplifting book that hopefully could, you know, help Jacob. Like I said, I haven't read it, so I don't know for sure, but I think this is the type of book that could just make a person feel happy. So
yeah, it seems like it to me for sure. That's a cool one. Okay, I have one for magical-ish, and that is Jonathan Livingston Seagull. Have you read this book? I forget if you've read it.
Yes.
Did you like it?
I liked it, okay.
You liked it, you didn't love it. Okay. Yeah. I think because it's very short, and because it's very kind of calm, it's about some seagulls who are flying around, and one of them, like, they all kind of fly because that's what they do, like just to go get food or to go move somewhere. But Jonathan Livingston, he likes flying because it's fun, and he likes doing tricks and stuff. And it's like this weirdly meditative, peaceful book that's very calming. And so yeah, I think that one because it's magical. One that is, I think, more on the pretentious side of things, but is also kind of fun, is Grapefruit by Yoko Ono. Have I ever talked about this book before?
No.
Okay, that's cool. That's good, because I repeat a lot of books. Grapefruit is a very strange book. It's sort of like a poetry collection and a conceptual art piece. Basically, Yoko Ono had this thing where she would do these instructions. And so she would give you an instruction, and the idea was like either you would actually do it, or you just thought about yourself doing it, and then that was interesting. So let me, like, I'm typing this in on Google because I don't have the book in front of me, aforementioned my bookshelves are not ready. But let's see, this one says, leave a piece of canvas or finished painting on the floor in the street. That's a good one. Interesting. Painting for the wind. Cut a hole in a bag filled with seeds of any kind and place the bag where there is wind. Because again, it's like you picture yourself doing it. You don't even have to do it in order to imagine yourself doing it. Cloud piece. Imagine the clouds dripping. Dig a hole in your garden to put them in. Travel piece. Make a key. Find a lock that fits. If you find it, burn the house that is attached to it.
Oh my God.
Again, like some of these you obviously can't actually do. What's this one?
Yeah.
Tuna fish sandwich piece. Imagine 1,000 suns in the sky at the same time. Let them shine for 1 hour. Then let them gradually melt into the sky. Make one tuna fish sandwich and eat. Oh, Yoko.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful, isn't it? So it's this, map piece. Draw a map to get lost. Like, it's these little instructions that I think, like I said, they sort of work as poems. They sort of work as conceptual art pieces. You can actually try and do some of them, or you can just not. And just imagine what it would be like to do that.
Yeah.
So I think that that's kind of a really whimsical, strange
book. I was going to say, it seems really uplifting. Like, just imagining all these weird little situations, like, cracked me up already just from you reading a couple of them.
Exactly. So. And the last one I thought I wanted to recommend was, excuse me, God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater. Just because I found it to be a very funny book. It's the last book, I picked this one because it was the last book I remember that kind of made me laugh out loud and made me chuckle a lot. It's a story of a guy, Mr. Rosewater, who is very, very rich. He just has generational wealth, you know, inheritance wealth. His family had these like giant factories or something like that that they made all their money from. And so now the family just has a lot of money, and the money makes money, kind of a situation. Mm-hmm. And he's the first person in his family after like generations and generations of wealth. He's the first person in his family who's sort of like, maybe we should try and do good with our money. And everyone in his family is like, what in the hell are you talking about, you freak? Everyone acts like he's a freak. So it's a little bit like magical in that it's I guess it's a classic Kurt Vonnegut, but the characters are a little bit more caricatures than they are like real people. But everyone's sort of like, what are you talking about? Stop being ridiculous. Money is for making more money. Like, that's why we make money. But he's like, okay, no, I really want to help people. Like, that's what I want to try and do. But he doesn't know how, because he's like lost touch with reality. He just doesn't know how to actually help people. So what he does is he goes to a very small town where the people are quite poor. And it's like one of the factory towns where like the people that work there mainly work for his company, I think, something like that. And he sets up a little office where he just tries to help people. And like, they'll either call him or they'll show up and they'll be like, I need help doing this thing, or I can't pay my health bill, or I can't do that. And he just tries to help people as much as he can, but he's thinking so small scale. Like, instead of like hiring help to do it or anything, he's just trying to use all of his money to help people, that it kind of spirals out of control. And it's really funny, but also really meaningful, because it's like, money isn't everything. But also, if you have money, you should use it to help people. It's fascinating. It was so strange. It was very weird. So that's the other reason I think that Jacob might like it, since he's like magical and pretentious. I'm like, that is kind of a weird book. That might be up your alley. Awesome.
Very cool. Those are lots of recommendations that are like completely different from each other, but somehow all
they were so different.
Fit.
You're right.
I love that.
Again, Jacob, we're sending you a really big hug.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this next one comes from Maggie. She says, "Hi, Ariel and Raylene. I recently read Johnny Appleseed by finding it randomly at the library. After finishing it, I learned it was the winner of Canada Reads competition this year. Can you recommend any award-winning books? And do awards affect whether you're more likely to pick up a book?" I thought that was an interesting question.
Yeah, I'm glad you picked this one, because we don't often do questions on the pod, but I think that this is an interesting thing to talk about. I struggled so hard with this, because it turns out I don't care about awards.
Me neither. That's what I realized. I googled award-winning books and was just like scrolling through these award-winning books, and I was like, oh, I've read one, okay, maybe two of these.
Yeah.
And it's just not something I gravitate towards.
Yeah. It's so interesting because I was, again, like, just like you, I was scrolling through all the books I've read, because aforementioned, my books aren't on my shelves, so I just scroll through my Goodreads to see what I've read. And I was looking at all the books I've read, and I was like, what in the hell? None of these are like, oh, quote unquote, award winning. Like, none of these, I didn't. And especially to answer Maggie's question correctly, I didn't read them because they were award-winning. Like,
no, exactly.
So the two that I saw, funny enough, were some of our book club books, The Memory Police and On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous. I know that those books both had quite a bit of prize hype, nominated for things. But it's funny because we ended up not liking either of those books very much.
No, exactly. That's the thing. I find, oftentimes if I read an award-winning book, I either think it's just okay, or I actively don't like it.
I know. So I actually don't, I couldn't think of one. I was like, I actually, for the first time maybe, just have showed up completely blank. I don't have one really. Because I was like, I literally can't find a book that I read just because it won an award or because it was nominated for an award. In our last episode, we were talking about Detransition Baby. And that book is a book I heard of because of awards. And that was like a big thing I wanted to kind of mention here. I feel like in my life, I know about a lot of different awards, like the Prince, the Pulitzer, the Booker, the Women's Prize, in Canada, the Governor's Prize, or Canada's, the Governor General's Award, or Canada Reads. Like, I'm aware of a lot of different prizes, and I'm always interested to see what's longlisted and what's shortlisted. I find it fun to sort of be like, oh, what's on the docket this year? But I don't end up buying those books or reading them because of their nominations. But I kind of was like, it's more of a subtle thing. Like, it's more of a subconscious thing, I think. Because I'm pretty clear, because of the reading I've done, that I clearly don't buy books because they're nominated. However, the way that the literary world works if a book is even just nominated, let alone if it wins an award, it gets a lot more marketing money.
Yeah,
so definitely. It gets way more table space. It will be in more bookstores. It will be recommended more, and the author will do more podcast interviews, and there will be more articles written about it, and more copies will be sent to influencers, etc. So there's this big, once you get nominated for a prize or win it, suddenly there's way more money behind the marketing. And so there's loads of books that I think I have found out about because they were nominated / won awards. And so they showed up on my Instagram more, or I saw them in bookshops more. You know what I mean? So I'm not saying that
it's more of a subconscious.
Exactly. I think it does influence. I think it influences us all in maybe ways that you don't realize. And it isn't unless you know, like, oh, actually, because I'm like on Instagram and I care about the book world, I know what is nominated for the Booker Prize. So when I see something in shops on a lot of tables, I'm like, okay, yeah, you're there because you were nominated for the Booker Prize.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think people might not realize actually that book prizes play a really big part in marketing.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is there are so many book prizes that I don't even realize what, like, I'll just see the little stamp on the front of a book and I'm like, oh, it won some award, but I don't know which one because there's so many. I just can't keep track. And honestly, it doesn't really mean a lot to me. So I don't really pay attention to it that much. But I do have two books that I chose because I just wanted to recommend a couple of award-winning books that I've read and enjoyed. And the first one would be The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt, which won the Pulitzer Prize in 2014 for fiction.
Yeah.
So I thought that was worth mentioning. Maybe the fact that it had won that award influenced me to read it a little bit because I did read it a few years ago. So, you know, maybe earlier than I might have because it is such a huge honking book. And I read it when, I think in 2015 or so. So, wow, that was 6 years ago.
I know, we're so old.
I was like 21, so, yeah, or 20 years old, whatever. So I was, you know, a young person reading this big, big book. Oh, man. So, yeah, I feel like the prize may have influenced me a little bit in that one. Yep. And honestly, the copy I have has this giant stamp on the front that says winner of the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, as far as award-winning books go, this is one that I feel like really deserved to win an award. So that's why I wanted to mention it. And then I have another one that also has won a couple of awards, I think, and that is Severance by Ling Ma.
Oh, yeah. It's got, my copy has some silver things on it.
It's got multiple awards. It won the Writing Award for Fiction last year. It also has received the Kirkus Prize, the Young Lions Fiction Award, and was a New York Times Notable Book of 2018. So does have a lot of gravitas, totally. As people would say. So that one, I just wanted to mention those. But you talking about reading a book because of its award, I was trying to think of one while you were talking, and I actually realized one because I'm doing the Pop Sugar 2021 Reading Challenge this year. I'm attempting to do it.
Yeah.
And one of the prompts on the challenge is to read a book that won the Women's Prize. So it's interesting, we were talking about the Women's Prize in the last episode. And actually, I read this one already. I read An American Marriage by T.R.E. Jones, as you probably remember, and that one won the Women's Prize in 2018.
Right.
So that was one that I did read specifically because of its award, because I had to read it for my Pop Sugar Challenge. So I could have read any book that had won the Women's Prize, but that was one that I did kind of already want to read. So it was because of multiple reasons that I ended up reading it, but that was the reason I read it when I did, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that was worth mentioning.
I think one book I can remember that had so many awards on it was, what's it called? Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the
Universe. I was just thinking that.
That one is hilarious because it's got like six giant
awards. It's covering half the cover.
Yeah. I always remember being like, okay, I get it. You won a bunch of awards.
Yeah.
One book that comes to mind that we read recently, Dig by A.S. King. It won the Prince. Oh, yeah. So that's really cool. True. That's kind of the most prestigious YA prize. I was thinking about how the impact of awards for me is less on the book and more on the author.
That's
true. I think the way I think about it is more sort of like, okay, it's cool that this book won, this specific book won the Pulitzer or whatever. But for me, it's more like, oh, okay, this author is a Pulitzer Award winning author. Like, they're like a very prestigious author. So I think that for me is a bigger impact. It's less about the book, it's more about the author.
Well, that's kind of like Colson Whitehead. He has won the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction twice now.
Exactly.
So it's like, he's
I think of him as like, whoa, what a well-established guy who's like won multiple awards, and that's really cool. cool. Like, that's a very prestigious author. Whereas I don't think, oh, I'm going to read, like, The Nickel Boys because it won, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. It's more, you think about the author.
The other thing I do want to mention, just because we're talking about it, so I'm like, I have to say all my thoughts, is I feel like, in a lot of ways, awards are more for writers than they are for readers. I think it impacts the world of writers more than it's supposed to impact the world of readers. And like I said, there are massive impacts, like massive, massive impacts. When you win a big prize, like the Giller Prize or whatever, first of all, you instantly win a lot of money. Like, that's really cool. There's a cash prize. There's an actual cash prize with all of these big prizes. Secondly, putting that sticker on, like, they've done studies and stuff of how it on average, it depends on the prize, right? Completely depends on the prize, but, like, it's like you will always end up selling like 20% more than you would have, or 50% more than you would have, or whatever. Like, it actually impacts the numbers that you sell. And like I said, because you then get all of these extra interviews that you maybe wouldn't have gotten, extra write-ups and extra special reviews, you become more established in the public eye. So people are more like, oh yes, I know that author. So the next time you publish,
and they're more likely to pick up another book.
Exactly. Yeah. So it is important. And I do think it's an interesting part of the reading world. I think, for example, I really think I will care more about prizes once I am a writer who's writing versus as a reader. But yeah, we definitely need to ask people's thoughts on prizes and if they have favorite prizes and if they have like prizes that they've noticed like every time, because it's sort of, I sort of think it would be fun to be very invested in like one prize. There's too many to be invested in all of them.
No, exactly. I would love to maybe dive a little deeper into that and see if there are any prizes that have consistently put out books that I'm very interested in.
Yeah.
And then maybe I could read all of the prize winners
or something,
and then
like
try and keep up to date.
Yeah, that's really cool. Fun challenge. I was literally just now scrolling through the Pulitzer Prize winners, and a prize like that is really cool because it's so historical. And like if you scroll back, it's really funny, like I start scrolling back, apparently the last person who won it was Richard Powers for The Overstory. Before that it was Less by Andrew Sean Greer, and then before that it was The Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead. But if you keep scrolling back, you suddenly see like Middlesex by Jeffrey Eugenides.
I always forget that's one.
Yeah, you see American Pastoral by Philip Roth, and then I scrolled so far back that Ernest Hemingway was on here, and I was like,
oh my gosh,
it's so cool that you see these like very historical and important. To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee, and yeah, it was The Old Man and the Sea by Hemingway that won it, Fable by William Faulkner. Like, I'm like, that's so cool to have a lot. Oh, Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck.
Yeah, something that's like a still a modern ongoing award that has such a historical context.
Exactly.
It's so, like, this is the same award that did you say Steinbeck won it once?
Yes. Yeah.
That's crazy.
That is like, crazy. Okay. And that's just like, that's what I mean. I feel like
you could
it
be
means
on the same level as
yeah.
Mr. John Steinbeck.
Yeah. You're like you suddenly join this really prestigious list. So that's why I also think it means a lot more to the writers than it does to the readers. Because like if I was publishing a novel and it got nominated for the Pulitzer, I'm trying to imagine me getting nominated for a Pulitzer. Okay. But like if we putting that daydream aside, if I imagine being nominated for the Pulitzer, even just being nominated, let alone winning, I would like, it would mean so much to me, because like you said, it's this historic thing that is such a prestigious thing. Whereas as a reader, if I'm reading a book that was nominated or won the Pulitzer, I'm like, oh, that's cool. It's just like a fact.
Exactly.
So that's an interesting way to kind of picture, maybe it's more important to writers and publishers than it is to readers.
I would be curious to see how many readers really care about it, because I know that there are obviously people out there who do follow the awards, so I'm curious if any of our listeners are fall into that.
Yeah, there are some people who like follow one or two. I know that there's a lot of fans of the Booker Prize and the Women's Prize. Is it time we start the Books Unbound Prize? We'll get our own sticker and we start slapping on books.
The winner is always going to be George Orwell, Tessa Moshfegh, A.S. King. These are the only people that matter.
Oh, man. I mean, what can I say? Quality is quality, Raylene.
It's true. That all was right. Fun. Well, do you want to read the last recommendation?
This is one that you actually picked, but I'm happy to read it. Leah's pick. Oh, no, wait. I picked this one, didn't I? Just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Leah, yeah. This is a cool one. Okay. Dear Ariel and Raylene, in The Fault in Our Stars, Hazel Grace describes her favorite book, An Imperial Affliction, as the kind of book that you can't tell people about. A book so special and rare and yours that advertising your affection feels like betrayal. I know it goes against the quote to ask what I'm about to ask, but here goes. What is your Imperial Affliction book? Or rather, the book that best represents your heart/world view. Not necessarily your favorite book, but a book you'd consider to be in the same tier. Preferably not one that's been mentioned on the podcast before. Impossible. Loving the podcast from Toronto! Okay, this is a very interesting question. I really liked it. I liked that it was a reference to The Fault in Our Stars. But I also think it's a really interesting way to think about like those books that are really near and dear to your heart. I'm going to be honest, I don't think that I can say a book that I haven't talked about on the podcast, because like the whole point of the podcast basically is me and Raylene shouting about the books we love. I'm really excited to hear what you picked, Raylene.
Okay, so this one was actually kind of tricky for me because I couldn't think of just one book that really screamed Ruben. I ended up just kind of looking at my shelves and I picked five. I'll go through them really quickly. But I feel like this stack of five books pretty much just describes my, like it says, my heart/worldview. So the first one is Wonder by R.J. Palacio. Mm. And I chose this because I really, and you're going to see this as a theme throughout all the books. Yeah. I just want everyone to be nice to each other.
That's gonna literally be my theme as well, so maybe that's why we're friends.
Yeah, like that's my worldview, is I just wish everybody could get along better. I wish everybody could be more understanding of other people who are different from them. So Wonder was really the first one that came to mind for me, but then that slides right into the next one, which is So You've Been Publicly Shamed by John Ronson.
Yeah.
It fits the same idea where it's like, can we just take a step back and maybe like be humans and discuss things as humans instead of just attacking each other and being horrible? Because a lot of the stories in this book, yes, somebody made a mistake or did something wrong, but then the reactions and the way that everything is handled just like blew my mind and made me so sad that this is the type of world we live in. So that was that one. And then next up is Tiny Beautiful Things by Cheryl Strayed. Along the same lines, she gives such great advice, and everything she says is just like the way that I would like to be. And I feel like we've said before, she could totally be our mom. I feel like she raised me somehow, just like the way she talks and the way she is so like straightforward about things, that really resonated with me. So totally. I feel like Cheryl Strayed just makes a lot of sense to me. And then next up is I Am the Messenger by Marcus Zusak. Like I mentioned in the last episode, it's all about this guy who is kind of just a normal guy and is put into a position where he needs to help a whole bunch of people. And I just think that that is such a cool idea, because imagine if everybody was given a task where it's like, everybody, you just have to go be nice to that one person, like do something really special for that person, and he has to do that for like 20 people. So it's just really interesting, but I resonate with that a lot. And then the last one is The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up.
Oh, that's such a perfect pick for you.
Because that's just, it's who I am.
Raylene is organized.
I like to be very organized. I like to be tidy. I like to be clean. And I relate to Marie Kondo quite a bit in the sections where she talks about how she used to try and like clean up her family members' rooms. And
that's
like throw away her like things that belong to other people. And I'm like, oh man, that's totally something I would do. And I need to be reminded, like, you're not allowed to do that. So that just kind of, that popped into my head when I was thinking of this question as well. So mine is kind of, just like a pile of happiness and like, please be nice to each other. Is kind of my worldview. But unfortunately, there isn't just one, like, one fiction book that is my Imperial Affliction. It's kind of a different take on the question, I guess, but there it is.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. I wasn't able to pick just one book. I looked at the books that I wanted to pick, and the book that if I had to pick would have been So You've Been Publicly Shamed. Like, yeah. If there's one book,
yeah, if
that,
I had to pick just one.
Yeah, yeah. That, like she's saying, is more about worldview, is maybe not my most favorite book, because that would obviously be Animal Farm, but, like, So You've Been Publicly Shamed, and these other books, but especially that book, is about compassion, right? Mm-hmm. It's about empathy. It's about thinking about people as people that, as creatures that are as complicated as you. You see someone make a mistake, and that's what's so interesting about the book, because it's not like these people were completely innocent. They did do something wrong, and some to different varying degrees. Some people were really insensitive, or some people, like, did something legitimately wrong. Like, at the beginning of the book, there's a case of a guy who did intense plagiarism as a journalist, and it's like, okay, well, clearly that's not okay at all. However, do you treat that person like a human being, or do you, like, swear at them on Twitter publicly so that they're fired instantly, right? Like, it's like these varying degrees, and that book is about compassion, and I think that for me actually is the radical thing. The radical thing isn't to be shitty to people and to scare them and to get them fired and to ostracize them and to make them feel inhuman and like they can never be a person. It is to be compassionate and to love them, even if they're being fucking stupid. obviously, there's degrees to that. Like, if we're talking about an actual rapist, well, okay, we're going to be talking about a different situation. If we're talking about someone who did a misstep or did something a little bit insensitive, and they do seem like, okay, actually, yeah, this person, like, if you just think about people in that book, like, would that person usually have done that? Was that just a mistake? Or is that, like, are they a bad person? You're like, no, it was a mistake that they clearly can learn from. Then maybe don't treat them like they're a villain and a devil. So I think, like, that book for me is so powerful. But then if I can be like you and pick a couple other ones. Please. Animal Farm, because it's just my favorite book. And it, I think there's a lot of reasons why I love it. A massive one is just that for me, it's like a perfect novel. Like, I just respect it as a piece of writing, so it doesn't have to do that much with my worldview. But on the other hand, it is a book about standing up for what you believe in, and it's a book about, like, taking responsibility for your actions and being like, okay, well, I'm living in a bad situation, so maybe I need to band together with my fellow animals and take over the farm. And, oh, look, these pigs aren't being so reasonable. Maybe we need to do something about that. And then people not doing anything about that. So I find that very interesting. Tiny Beautiful Things, for all the reasons that you said.
Yeah.
An Absolutely Remarkable Thing would 100% be on my kind of top five worldview books. Very similar to the reasons of So You've Been Publicly Shamed.
Yeah.
I relate to April May more than I should, but as a person who has been online for a decade, has dealt with insane harassment online, and, like, has started to think of herself sometimes as, like Hank Green says in the book, sometimes more of a tool than as a person, I think that book is so powerful. And then the last one is Albatross, because... for me, it is important to be kind of dumb and wacky and silly and weird, and that book is that, and that is such a big part of, I think, like, like, personality wise I'm Albatross and you're Spark Joy. Wait, what's the book called? Tidying Up. That's our personality parts. Albatross just being this kind of wacky book, but it is also about a person who is in the public eye, is struggling with that, with their mental health, but that also is trying to make good art. Like, wants to be a writer, but is trapped as a golfer. That's my life, really. And wants to be a writer, is trapped as a YouTuber. Doesn't know how to escape. So I really relate to that in a similar way to An Absolutely Remarkable Thing. You know, it's like that character.
Totally.
Who...
Yeah, those definitely go together.
They really do. Parallels. So I think people can see why I like those books so much. But yeah, I know what, was it Stephanie, or am I making things up? Leah. I don't know where I got Stephanie. Oh, that was the first person. I think that that's where Leah's coming from. These books are so special and rare that they, like, feel like betrayal talking about them, or, like, you feel like, I guess for me, it's more like I feel so vulnerable talking about them, because we're like, these are my values and these are how I feel.
These books are my heart.
Yes. And if you don't like that, I don't know what to do, because that's just who I am.
Definitely, like, I want to recommend Tiny Beautiful Things, and So You've Been Publicly Shamed to every single person.
Exactly.
But if you don't like it, I don't know if every single person will love them the same way we do.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally. 100%. Gosh.
Well, that was a good one. I really would love to hear what all of you guys would choose for your Imperial Affliction book. What is that book that just screams you, screams your heart? I think that, I mean, if you're willing to share, of course. So no pressure, guys. but I think that's really interesting. And it's interesting that it turned out differently than I would have probably assumed when I first read this question. I was trying to think, like, that what is the one book that just is me? And there isn't just one, you know, we're all complicated people. There's lots of different things that describe us. So same with picking the books. I think we both picked five. That's pretty hardcore. Oh well. So yeah, that was lots of fun. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we are off to go record our bonus mini podcast Books Unbucket over on for our Patreon. So if you're a patron, you can listen to this excellent content that we're about to record, which is we're going to talk about what books we want to read this spring/summer. We're kind of doing a little bit of a TBR podcast thing, which is fun. We don't really ever do that, but there are a lot of books that are like on my spring summer radar that I would love to read. So our patrons will be able to hold us accountable at the end of the summer if we didn't read any of these books. So yeah, we're off to go record that. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye.